Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. We are, of course, back on the Middle East again, and I'm delighted because I've got a scholar, an expert, who lives in the Middle East, who reports from the Middle East. He lives in Beirut. He knows the region. He knows Lebanon. He knows what's going on in the region. He's been doing this for a long time. His name is Franklin Lamb. He's a journalist. He's an author. He's the director of Americans Concerned for Middle East Peace. He's also a board member of the Sabra Shatila Foundation, and he's a longtime civil rights activist. Franklin, I welcome you to the program. We connected this time.
Well, we did, and what a kind introduction, and it's my privilege and pleasure to join you, Stephen. Let me give you just a teeny bit of insight. I am, as you know, I live in Dahiya, which is South Beirut, which is the Hezbollah area, and we have 14 hours of electricity a day on a good day. Right now, it's pitch black. I was up at AUB. I was going to do this from the American University of Beirut because I thought the connection would be better. Well, it turned out that it wasn't, and I had something I had to come here. So now I'm sitting in my apartment in Dahiya, complete darkness, down to my last 5 inches, Stephen, of my last candle. I don't know how long that's going to last. But anyhow, it's quiet here, it's peaceful, people are inside, and we have a surprisingly good connection given the, you know, the telecommunications problems here. I can hear you very well. I hope you can hear me.
I hear you perfectly, and you clued me in last time when it was touch and go trying to get you on the program, and we failed, not because you didn't want to come on, but because of all the problems that you just explained.
Yes.
It's not exactly like, for me in Chicago, where, you know, I get up and I turn the light on, and
and
it goes on. And I go online, and it's fine,
yeah.
And I can make a phone call. I can do everything normally,
yeah.
And I don't think
I
about the power's going to go out.
I know. It's a different world. And when you go down the street, and especially I notice it among women, always scowling, always frowning here, it's just that, Stephen, you cannot predict anything. If you've got an appointment, if you've got to send an important email, you can never be sure. What happened a few days ago as a result of the uprising in Egypt, in Lebanon, one of the problems is we need gas from Egypt. There was a contract a few years ago. That's been cut. And it's affected the country, the rural areas a lot, the mountains to the north and the down south. Not so bad in Hamra, Beirut, the center, but we're starting to feel it now. And today, Sunday, we're not with industry closed, a lot of the offices, we should be better. We've had about 2 hours all day of electricity here. That's why I went to Hamra, because I had some work to do. So anyhow, I'm thrilled that you understand. You seem to really understand, and it's a different world. I don't know what it's like to have real internet anymore, or reliable electricity. Anyhow.
I do understand, believe me, and I know that probably in most parts of the world, Franklin, things do not function as normally as they do in Chicago, to say the least. I mean,
yeah,
you could probably
yeah.
go to cities all over
yeah.
the place, and you simply don't have the accessibility of the things that we simply take for granted here in America,
yes.
at least
yes.
in most places.
Yes.
I have to ask you this. Is
sure.
the power situation still the fallout from the 2006 war?
No, I wouldn't say that. You know, it's been bad since, well, always. Very bad during the 75-90 Civil War. Worse. Got better under Hariri when he ran up that $40 billion in debt. There was some of that applied to the infrastructure and the electricity, but the problem is that the government has not been able to apply, you know, the necessary resources to have a real electric system. We've got it bad here, but up north, they don't have it for days, sometimes weeks at a time. You've probably heard from time to time they burn tires in Tripoli and Akka and places up there. It's hard to believe that with so many billionaires here, and of the 128 members of parliament, everyone is a millionaire, but they do not have for the mass of the people even electricity. It's just a huge gap. It's hard to imagine. The solution, well, depends who you say. Hezbollah has put that, you know, second in their agenda now that they've got the government. We'll see what they can do. But it's complicated. They need something like a nuclear reactor. Iran's offered, but nobody's taking them up. It's a major problem. Electricity is a major problem. Another one, of course, is water. With this land, with so many beautiful mountains and snowfall and runoff, virtually everybody in this country buys bottled water.
Oh, my goodness.
The whole country. And, of course, you know who, you can imagine who controls that. One of the ZMs, one of the heads of one of the sects here. People think I'm nuts, and certain Americans are, when you drink tap water. They can't imagine you doing that. But we ran some tests. I mean, it's not the best water. But I'm still around, and I find it, you know, I just don't like to pay $3 a day, well, that's an exaggeration, say $2 a day for water. We're not used to that in Chicago. You don't pay, you don't do that, do you?
Oh, no.
Good Chicago water, I imagine.
Well, my water isn't as pure as it should be either. And Chicago,
no.
On Lake Michigan, by the way, mm-hmm. I haven't seen this said in quite some time, but I remember seeing it and reading it said in the past that Chicago in this area is the Saudi Arabia of fresh water because of Lake Michigan. But the damn lake has been, over the years, has been so polluted. So even though they filtrate it and they do whatever they do to clean it up, what comes out of the tap is acceptable. And I absolutely drink it, although I boil it and then cool it in bottles in my refrigerator. That'll get rid of the bacteria and stuff, but it doesn't get rid of the heavy metals. So
interesting.
But I feel like you do. Why should I pay? I mean,
no.
I pay. I live in a condominium, Franklin, and I pay for water that the building pays for through my condo assessment. Why should I pay that and then pay again to have to buy the stuff?
Yeah.
And
no.
the stuff you buy, by the way, you have no assurance of its purity.
Absolutely.
I wrote about it once, and I wrote about the contaminants in most bottled water that people buy, and if they read the list of things they can't even pronounce, I don't think a lot of those people would continue buying that water.
Yeah. That's fascinating subject. I'm thrilled
we certainly want to talk about what's going on in the region, but I do understand the problem. Let's start with Lebanon because you're there. And I guess it was an earthquake of sorts that Hezbollah got its prime minister installed. And I guess it's fair to say it's really taking control of the government. Talk about that.
Well, I'm extremely, as friends will tell you, pro-American. I criticize the government, but actually I'm happy to hear your voice because you're an American. I get a lot of requests from people, and I don't have a lot of time, but I always sit with Americans because, I frankly just like them. So if I get thrown out of my neighborhood and my neighbor to my behind me, I probably shouldn't say this, but Osama Hamdan, the leader of Hamas, you're a great guy. I was with him the other night. I'm sort of right in the center. But look, I owe it to you and your audience to tell you exactly what I think about the situation here. Yeah, Hezbollah controls the government. There are probably going to be announced this week, Stephen, let us say 24 cabinet posts. That's down from 6. From the bloated cabinet, which was 30. The reason there were so many and still are so many, as you know, is because there's so many sects here and everybody's got to have their two or three seats. Michelle Aoun, the ally, the critical, crucial ally of Hezbollah, he wants Mekati to run it up to 32. Seats because he wants a bunch of them. So that's one of the things that's going on today. I think we're going to see 24 seats. They're all, frankly, they're all 24, Stephen, are going to be controlled by Hezbollah.
Oh my goodness.
But you are not going to, you're not going to see, Stephen, one Hezbollah face in that cabinet. In other words, I was a couple nights ago with Mohammed Finesh, one of the MPs from Hezbollah, one of my favorites, a really good guy. And what he was explaining is, look, of course we've got the government, but we're not going to be an easy target any more than our fighters try not to be an easy target in the south for Israel. We're not going to be an easy target for all of our critics. You know, they're calling it already the Iranian government. They're saying that it was a coup. We'll see what it works out. But you're going to see these names. They're going to be basically technocrats. All the sects, the 18 sects, are going to be a little disappointed because they're not going to have so many of their people in there as they would like to. As you know, the March 14, the Saad Hariri pro-American, pro-Saudi faction, which was the government before it was forced to resign, they're boycotting as of tonight. So that means there's, you know, a one-sided government, which isn't what Hezbollah wants. It's not what anyone wants. We will see. I think that March 14 will have some defectors who will crawl in and take a spot. But, yeah, it's a Hezbollah government, but they're not flaunting it. They're laying low. They don't want to be in the spotlight. As Finesh told me, listen, you know that if we have one Hezbollah person anywhere for a conference, for a government, for any venue, everyone on the planet should know that all of Hezbollah is there. So they're trying to, as we go into this next week, lay very low. Of course, they dominate the government. But what's really fascinating, Stephen, is that what they're saying to me is, listen, we really may, if we're successful, we're going to shock a lot of people. We're going to shock them because we're not doing anything with foreign affairs. We're going to get cows in the bakar. We're going to get some of these electrical problems solved. And, you know, Lebanon is ranked out of 205 countries that where you rank, for example, Internet. We're 181. Mm. We're near the bottom. That's why we can't download anything. But they've got a plan that they say through DSL and fiber optics, they're going to introduce, hopefully soon, a system where our Internet will speed up 11 times faster. In other words, probably similar, maybe, to what you've got in Chicago. They're going to be all about good government. That's all Hezbollah wants to hear. We want the streets fixed. We want the traffic making sense. We want people to obey the red lights and respect the officers. You know, we want prices to be stabilized. Their idea is, by the time of the next election, they're willing to go before the Christians and the Druze and the Armenians, the Zhajas and the Shemiles and everybody and say, well, here's what we've done in these 7 months. They're planning only for a seven-month government. It's not going to last longer than that, this one. Then they want to go to elections, and they'll say, test us. We're all about good government. Nobody understood that, or few people understood that. Certainly the Americans didn't know. We're on a terrorist list. We'll see. It's brilliant. It's exciting. It's fascinating. Will they fail? I have no idea, but that's the orientation that's coming out of here. Of course, the Americans are, you know, and the adversaries are criticizing the government. But it was, at least it was done constitutionally and without guns. So as we enter, the second half of February, there's a lot, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on with the government of Lebanon.
That is very important news, frankly. I was going to say, before you explained all this, and what you explained I did not know, I was going to say that my hope is that the rubber meets the road when Hezbollah has the government. How will it govern? How will it serve the Lebanese people? How will it serve all the people of Lebanon? And if they really make an honest effort, and if they have enough tangible achievements.
Result.
It will really open the eyes of the Lebanese people, even though the West may not recognize it and Israel won't recognize it. The Lebanese people will, because they'll have
something
better than what they had before Hezbollah took over and ran the government.
They'll have electricity. Can you imagine how important that? Do you know how frustrating it is? A lot of these buildings in South Beirut and in Beirut, they're 11 floors. If you're a 67-year-old woman, overweight, and your flight is 11 up, what do you do?
Oh,
they sit
terrible.
Down there waiting. I mean, there's a thousand problems that you Chicagoans and Americans, no reason for you to even know about them. But I think it's a fascinating slice of history, Stephen, and it's up to them. Some people get confused. They think that all this character lambing stuff is whatever it's called, Stockholm syndrome. He's in love with Hezbollah. Not at all. I may get thrown out of my neighborhood after your interview and when we get to the subject of Palestinian human rights. No, my issue is it's human rights and it's Palestine, Palestine, Palestine. I support the resistance. I support them because they're on the right side of history and the right side of this effort, and I respect what they've been able to achieve and what their plans are to help liberate Palestine. That's my, association with them. I know a bunch of them, but we've had some heated sessions, and I'm not on their side when it comes to Palestinian civil rights in Lebanon because they're on the wrong side. And I'm sorry to say that, and I'm going to take some heat for that. But I owe it to your audience to say it as it is. But anyhow, we're going to see what happens.
It'll be exciting ahead. I know you're going to write about it, and I'm looking forward to your articles. And I have to echo your sentiment. I make no bones about it. I absolutely, on my sleeve, I wear my support for the Palestinian people. But even more important than that, Franklin, I support all the oppressed people of the world. I don't care who they are. I don't care where they are. If they're not getting a fair shake, then I am their ally, whether it's Palestine, whether it's Lebanon, whether it's Haiti, whether it's the Congo, whether it's my own city of Chicago, where there's terrible oppression against poor people, minorities, blacks, and we're going to get a new mayor, looks for certain, like Rahm Emanuel, you know who he is, will be the new mayor. He is by far out in front in the polls. They probably will be a runoff. The election is coming up in about a week. There'll probably be a runoff in April, but he's got some big guns and big money behind him, and I just dread the thought of going from the horrible Daley regime to the even worse Emanuel regime, and he literally wants to make the people of Chicago, who can afford at least, pay for the deficit that Chicago has to make up, and all the other candidates support the same agenda. That's one of the crosses we have to bear here. But let's go back to Lebanon. One more thing about Lebanon, and then let's just jump over to Egypt, because that really is the epicenter of what's going on in the region. Hezbollah has another big issue they have to be concerned about, the likelihood that this UN-backed tribunal is going to accuse them of murdering Rafiq Hariri in 2005, and I honestly believe they had absolutely nothing to do with it. They certainly had nothing to gain by killing him. Your thoughts?
Wow. Well, I'm fascinated by your opinion on their involvement. Hezbollah, I cannot even overstate the crisis that they've got. For, you know, a couple of years ago, I didn't take them much seriously, or I didn't think much about it when they started talking about the special tribunal. But we've learned a lot. What's going to happen is at least four of their members, including two very key members, are going to be indicted and convicted. And then we have, and I don't want to exaggerate this, but it's going to be the equivalent to the medieval period and since, when the Jews were accused of killing Jesus. Now, in this case, it'll be the Shia who killed not the prophet Sunni Muhammad, but the leader of the Sunni community here in Lebanon, Rafiq Hariri. When that occurs, and the Hezbollah and the Syrians who are going to be indicted will not go to The Hague. The defense team there will have no real work to do for them because they're going to be all convicted in absentia. The first tribunal international, as you know, that shoes that. So I think what's going to happen then, it will be a floodgate that will not stop for years, decades, or maybe ever, of targeting the resistance here on this issue, that they killed Rafiq Hariri. Therefore, we can sanction Lebanon. We can theoretically send in troops here to try to arrest them. We could bring NATO here, theoretically. We can bring the Sixth Fleet here to get those guys. In other words, it's going to be a propaganda battle, as far as I can see, forever. And that explains why Hezbollah, who understands all of this, I think, is so upset about it. The Makati government is going to do three things, as you know. They're going to pull the Lebanese judges. They're going to cut off the 40% funding that Security Council Resolution 1757 that they agreed to, and they're going to publicly disavow it. They're going to do those three things. But you know, Stephen, that's not going to make one whit of difference. Lebanon is not even important for this tribunal, except it's the crime scene. Lebanon can do nothing. Hezbollah changed the government to try to interfere with the work of the court. It's not going to work. They can do nothing. So I'm sure that the Zionists, the Israelis, and the Americans have many plans of what's going to happen in terms of delegitimizing the resistance, smearing and defaming Hezbollah, and to that extent, bringing down in some ways the country of Lebanon if they have to, because their agenda is political. Now, maybe what I've said makes you think that I'm convinced that they were involved. I'm not completely convinced, but I follow the STL pretty closely, and it's obvious the direction things are going. So that's what I expect. It is a catastrophe, an unmitigated, you know, disaster for the resistance and for Hezbollah and to some extent Iran and certainly Syria. Where it all ends, nobody knows. I don't think it's going to cause a civil war here because nobody's got any power except the resistance. But the outside targeting the resistance and Lebanon, it's hard to calculate where it all ends. So you're right. It's the worst imaginable nightmare for Hezbollah and the resistance is that tribunal.
I don't know for certain, Franklin, but I swear, this just has a smell to it. It has an aroma to it. I've seen this stuff before, where there literally is a manipulated rigged system, and the forces that really are most empowered when they want to vilify another group, yeah. another individual, they just manipulate, yeah. they rig the system. I write so often yeah. on individual cases, political prisoners, mostly in America.
I hope you'll take mine in a couple of years. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, I mean, I've seen the same scheme repeated over and yeah. over again. And once
okay.
in a blue moon,
okay.
the authorities get the rug pulled out from under them, and the dirty scheme literally from the horse's mouth gets exposed,
mm.
but it really exposes
yeah.
what's repeated over and over again. Innocent people
yeah.
targeted, so we can say innocent groups targeted. I've written
yeah.
about a charity being convicted of literally giving charity, including in America, and sentencing
yeah.
One of the principals of the charity to 65 years in prison.
Yeah.
Because of
I know
giving.
The case, and I think I read your material. Are you talking about the Holy Land Fund?
The Holy Land Foundation, the largest Muslim charity
Foundation.
In America. And they absolutely,
yeah.
I communicate with one of their principals in prison. We exchange emails every now and then.
Wow.
I had his daughter on my program way back after it happened, and she connected me with him. And to be able to communicate emails, the individual in prison needs to request it, and then the prison authorities need to approve it. And they did. I think there's a limit on how many they can exchange emails with. In any event, I exchanged them with him and also three other people falsely accused sitting in four other people, five in total, in U.S. prisons. One of them is Lynn Stewart. The lawyer targeted
mm-hmm.
because she defended
mm-hmm.
the wrong
yeah.
client. Another lawyer
yeah.
sitting in a New York City jail because he defended the wrong client, Paul Berggren. We communicate all the time. I'm trying to help
wow.
him any way that I can.
Wow.
And the game is rigged against them. These people committed no crime. There's no evidence. They use secret evidence. They use infiltrators. Often people who committed a crime, and they have
yeah.
them on the hook, they can put them away for a
yeah.
long prison sentence. The crime could be
yeah.
murder, Franklin, and they agree to give them leniency if they will,
yeah.
quote-unquote, cooperate. In other words, lie for the prosecution.
Yeah.
And they do
exactly.
it over and over and over again, and sometimes
yeah.
they don't even get identified. So people, unidentified people, are giving secret, uncorroborated evidence, and they put innocent people away for long prison terms so they can do it against groups. I think it's the same scheme against Hezbollah. I can't imagine what they had to gain by killing Hariri. Can you see something they
well,
had to gain?
The March 14, the adversaries said that they just made a big mistake. They did something that they're good at. On behalf of Syria, Iran apparently was not really involved. Iran supposedly, depending on who you believe, mad as hell that they ever got involved in something like that. The Syrians, are trying to get out from under it, but some say that they're going to get hammered too. That's the big question around Lebanon, even in Dahiya, even among Hezbollah people who, they're not, as the Western media portrays them, as stupid fanatics, automatons. These are very sophisticated people, most of them. And they're wondering, excuse my language, what the hell happened, We don't know exactly. We might learn how it happened, if it happened. But the conventional wisdom is it was a huge mistake. It was a stupid mistake that Hezbollah undertook this contract, if they did, for Syria.
If they did.
Because they had nothing to gain, just as you said.
Oh, they absolutely had nothing to gain. We want to take a break,
right.
and we want to jump over to Egypt,
sure.
because I know listeners want to hear your views. I wrote an article where I included some of the history of Mossad that have done
yeah.
this sort of stuff over and over again for decades, and car bombs, which is the way Hariri died, is one of the
yeah,
specialties.
Yeah.
And
right.
Well, I absolutely believe Mossad did it, but I don't have any friends
okay.
at Mossad
okay.
who said, "Oh yes, we did it."
No. Yeah.
If
do you think, Stephen, Do you think the court is going to render a sound judgment?
Oh, absolutely
not. Are you prepared to believe? Oh, you don't? Okay.
No, I think the court is bought and paid for. They will either do what Israel and Washington wants, or God help them. I think literally their future may hang in the balance. Let's take a break, and we'll come right back, Franklin.
Yes, sir.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Cotel with Sierra Club Radio. Tune in Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern on the Progressive Radio Network.com to hear interviews with green authors, activists, politicians, celebrities, and more.
Hey, did you miss your favorite show? Don't worry, PRN has you covered. Just log on to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and go to the archive page where you can choose from any of our great programs. Listen or download shows from yesterday or even ones dating months back. The Progressive Radio Network, striving to make your lives easier.
Ellen Kamai, co-host of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Dr. Eugene Zamperone and I have been deeply involved with indigenous cultures and combined traditional knowledge with the latest research in natural health care. Join us each week on PRN from 1 to 2 p.m. every Monday. We'll bring you authors, professors, researchers, and activists who are committed to bringing you the latest information which you can use to ensure maximum wellness for yourself, yourselves, and your family. Tune in to Progressive Radio Network every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or anytime by visiting the archives. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.
I'm Elaine Schnupfer, host producer of Evolving Ideas. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and global on the Internet. Join me each week on the Progressive Radio Network to explore the universe and our relationship to it.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Franklin, it's amazing to me. My preferred format per program is to have one guest for an in-depth discussion covering topics that the guest prefers to discuss. And even in an hour, the program will end, and there'll be so much that we'll think about afterwards that was so important, and we didn't bring it up. And one reason is because there's just too much to fit into an hour. We need the whole day, maybe the whole weekend. And if we're talking about the Middle East, my goodness, is my count right? 22 Arab countries. They each have a story, and we spent the first half of the program talking about Lebanon. I would love to continue that, but I do want to shift over to Egypt because that certainly is so important, and that's the one I think deservedly getting the most headlines. And there certainly has been something that has changed. But I have some very strong thoughts about it. Again, I don't know for certain, but I honestly want to hold the cheers until I really see something a lot more tangible than the guy removed who I absolutely believe Washington has wanted out for a long time. And Egypt's military is a tool of the Pentagon, so they stood aside. There was so much telling on this end, Franklin. America's media, major media, television especially, is absolutely atrocious. The only time they ever cover foreign news, as a rule, is when America goes to war or Washington wants to denigrate some foreign leader, so they'll report it dutifully. It was completely different this time. They brought on pro-democracy figures from Egypt, giving them airtime, unheard of, unless Washington supports them. Well, why would they do that? Because I think they wanted Mubarak out. Aging, not 100% compliant, damaged goods, and what they really want, in my opinion, is the same regime with new faces, the facade of democracy, but really keeping the hardline rule in control. So, my goodness, we had a military coup d'etat. I don't think we've ever seen a military coup d'etat that anybody could say was a good thing. And we have people running Egypt now, all generals. Mubarak's government was all generals or former generals, including himself, a former general. And now we have the generals back in control, and they literally run everything in Egypt. So what's ahead? The rhetoric is always beautiful. We get wonderful rhetoric in America. The problem is that the policy doesn't follow the rhetoric. What are your thoughts on Egypt?
Well, I'm impressed and influenced by your analysis. And I did read your article this afternoon. As you know, Stephen, late yesterday and continuing today, there's a lot of people at Tahrir Square, and they're calling themselves the coalition, to monitor the revolution. In other words, the thoughts that you expressed just now, seems to me there's tens, probably scores of thousands of Egyptians who feel exactly what you've expressed. And they're in the square honoring the 300, the marchers. They put up photos of them. And every week, as I understand, or every day, they're going to have a demonstration highlighting one of the martyrs and monitoring and watching and insisting that this revolution doesn't get hijacked. And that if it is some sort of coup, that the struggle must begin, continue. You and I have got to put our faith in those brave people who brought this about. They achieved something amazing. You haven't done this in Chicago. We haven't done this anywhere in America or in many countries. I'm inclined, to give the people there the respect and the benefit of the doubt on this. I'm talking about the masses, that they're not just a bunch of flakes on Twitter and Facebook and unorganized without leadership and the young'uns who aren't listening to the elders and all that. I think the revolution will produce leadership. I'm very impressed with them. These people are not stupid, as you know. Many university graduates, or maybe many who have never been to school. But they're smart, and they love their country, and they know what they've been through for two generations. Maybe it's wishful thinking, Stephen, but I want to believe that by this coalition that they formed to monitor, why are they still in the square? Yeah, they're cleaning it up. But even by cleaning it up, they've distinguished themselves from other mass movements, feel responsibility.
Frank, let me say very emphatically,
sure.
Absolutely believe that street passion was and is real, and my heart is with those people. Those are real people, millions of them. They did not come out and literally risked their lives. They risked their lives.
Can you imagine what they risked? Torture.
Oh,
from Suleiman and people like him for 30 years.
Absolutely. And despite, I mean, they know what goes on in Egypt, and it still goes on in Egypt under the military.
Yeah.
The military is not a friend of the people. They stood aside, I think, because they got orders from the Pentagon to stand aside. But the military can be very harsh, and the Guardian that I quoted in one of my articles explained that they have arrested many people. They've tortured them. They've brutalized them.
Yeah.
They've beaten them.
Yeah.
I mean, the military is a very ugly operation when they want to be. And at the same time, these people put their lives on the line, and they went out in the street, and they slept on the street, and they stayed there. And I absolutely am with those people. It's the dark forces that want a different outcome are the ones that I'm suspicious of. And, of course, they have the military, and they have the guns. And I mean, if they want to use them, they really can cause an awful lot of carnage. And yet these people are defying them anyway. I'm trying to encourage them not to believe the rhetoric. Get out there and stay there until you see things happen. And when you see real change, then start believing in it. But so far, you got rid of a guy. I believe that the powers that be wanted out, and it was just a matter of when he was going to go. And because Washington alone wanted him out, literally a stiff wind could have taken him out. So to me, that is not a big accomplishment. The big accomplishment is achieving things that Washington and the West and Israel and the Egyptian army do not want to see happen, but there's no way they can stop them. So they do happen. That is real achievement. And I think they have a chance to do it if they sustain this mass pressure. I've said that a number of times, too. They honestly have a chance to get what they want, but not if they relent too easily or too quickly.
Okay, I agree absolutely. And would you accept, are you encouraged by what's happening this evening over there, is that this coalition that they've formed to monitor the revolution, that they're still there? And they're watching, and they're insisting, and they're having people power, grassroots, and maybe I know authority on the history of revolutions, but I'm impressed the fact that they love their country, they're cleaning up after themselves, and they're insisting that they're going to monitor every day, and if something goes wrong, if the council equivocates or looks like they're backtracking, the masses will be there. I don't know. I have confidence, Stephen, in these people.
I do too.
I think what they've done is so historic, as Chomsky says. He's never seen anything like it. I share your doubts and your questions. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I am like you. My heart is with them. I don't know. If I had to bet, I'm going to bet on them. I think they may overcome the junta, the generals. Because it's spreading, I've learned from emails from Egypt and from some journalists, they are so proud of themselves, and they are so proud of the international support that they've received, just as you and I have been activated and energized and inspired by them. They also are realizing that they're at the center of something really major in history. And all those bright people, and you've seen them on press TV and then other media, Al Jazeera, the interviews, those people are smart. And, you know, some people are saying, well, it was a thing, it didn't work, it was a little popular hilarity thing with Facebook, but that's almost an Orientalist view. I think we have to believe in them, and that they know what they're doing, or if they don't know every step, the process is so important. I'm optimistic. I say that, except that I'm reminded of your words, and I've thought about those too. When has a junta, you said, a coup achieved something good for the people? Some observers are saying, well, you know, because there's conscription, there's a draft, It's kind of like a jailer out here in the Baka. It's very compassionate with the inmates because he knows that his friends are in jail too. And but for the grace of Allah, he would be in there. That these generals are so identified with the people and the families or brothers. This is all of this. Having said all that, you can say, excuse me, that they tend to be corrupt. All of these people were very in leadership, were very close to Mubarak. I got a call this afternoon from a guy in Suez saying that he is convinced that down at Sharm el-Sheikh, guess who's giving the orders? Mubarak. So I don't know. It's kind of like you with his brother's role in the Hariri thing, if they had any. We don't know, but you're right to be suspicious and cautious. Maybe I think you're perhaps more sophisticated than I am on this subject. I tend to get emotional, and I'm so much in support of those people. Right now, I trust them. I trust them to monitor everything. There's so many sophisticated people there, and they're, it was a surprise what they achieved, even to them. But I think they're playing catch-up. I think they're filling in. I think they're getting lists of supporters. I think they're networking. I think, they're starting to organize parties that canvass people. I hope that that's the case and that they're building something really great that will sweep away at least, Stephen, 5, not 7 despots in this region who you can name. And I can name that we're onto something so major and so overdue. How many times have you bit your lip over the last 20 years or more saying, how can this be? How can this be? What is wrong with these Arabs? Do they have a congenital defect? As Lillian Paul used to tell me as we were in Palestine years and years ago, why can't they collaborate? Why can't they resist? Why can't they rise up against their leaders? Maybe this is the answer. I certainly hope so.
Well, 2 dictators have fallen in about a month, which is really astonishing, Tunisia being the other one. But the Tunisians have already discovered that even though they got rid of their 23-year reign despot, Ben Ali, the regime... the remnants of the old regime are still around, and they're still controlling things. And so far, a month later or so, they haven't really gotten too far. My concern, I am with the passion of those people on Egypt streets right now. My concern, I've got a lot of concerns, but one of them is that will the passion be sustained? Will it be as strong a few weeks from now, a few months from now? May the army just kind of go a little easy and wait them out and wait for that passion to fade? Yeah. Will the millions that turned out across the country decline to thousands? I'm very concerned about that. I mean, how long can people stay out on the streets and sleep on the streets and go through the immense hardship of what they put up with? And at the same time, there have been a lot of arrests that certainly have not been reported in America. I have a new article for tomorrow. I keep thinking I've run out of things.
You're a prolific fellow.
It's a continuation of today's article with a new title, and it just has up-to-date information on some of the stuff going on. I concentrate a lot on media reports in the one for tomorrow, Franklin, and differentiating with what's coming out of foreign headlines compared to what's coming out in America, where it's so abysmal. The New York Times, in early editions of the major U.S. papers, I checked. I can't check them all, but I checked the L.A. Times, New York Times, Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, and there was no mention of the fact that protesters are still going out there, and there were confrontations with police. And then a later edition, not really all that late, but later in the morning from the Washington Post, admitted that there were confrontations. The New York Times had a later article that I put in my article after quoting their headline one first thing this morning. The later article was the fact that the Egyptian military dissolved the parliament and suspended the constitution and called new elections in September. And still they devoted four words that I quoted, four words to the fact that there were some confrontations, the people and the military forces on the street. And they really downplayed them. And I think it was the Washington Post that reported them, but the undertone was that, they didn't say it, but the undertone was like they were saying, these people won a great victory. Who are these people clashing with the police, with the military? Maybe they're agitators or people who simply want to keep stirring the pot, even though they did something wonderful. The tone in the U.S. media is, oh, this wonderful victory, case closed, go home, go back to work, everything is fine, you won, we lost. Well, frankly, we both know that they may have won to this point, but the only way they're going to keep victories is to keep vigilant and keep at it. And there are so many examples right here in America, and I could remember quoting very knowledgeable people in our civil rights community here saying in the 1960s there was some wonderful civil rights gains won, and their comments were, and they're on the inside following this every day, their comments were, all of the 1960s gains have been lost, and things are worse now than at the trough of how things were in the 1960s when we had official segregation. Now we have de facto segregation, when we had all of the things that people really put their necks on the line to change, and they won a lot of them because they had great leaders like Martin Luther King. They're all swept away. They're all gone now. They've lost all of them, and things are actually worse now than they were back then. So it's amazing. I mean, the Egyptian people could get every one of their demands met, and if they don't stay vigilant literally forever, they could find all of them taken away from them. So I worry just about the passion ebbing now, because again, how long can they stay out on those streets?
I agree with everything you've said, and you remind me, Stephen, about the new Prime Minister of England, Cameron's statement that multiculturalism has failed, and Sarkozy's comments are exactly identical, and Merkel in Germany saying the same thing, that multiculturalism did not work and it must be rejected. If you substitute the word multiculturalism for integration, which you were just talking about in the U.S., the conservative forces would say that's failed, that integration has failed in America. I don't know what their thoughts are on that, but it's the equivalent of what they're saying now around Europe, that multiculturalism, that, you know, we can't have these Arabs, these Muslims in our society. You've got to be French. You can't be Moroccan French, you know, or Ethiopian. You've got to be French. You've got to have those values. You can't have a hijab. You can't do all this praying in public, especially when you overflow the mosque and you're out there in the plaza interfering with people's peace of mind with all these Muslims praying. I wonder if what you've said about the U.S. and segregation and the civil rights movement doesn't apply, and the essence is, of course, racism. Interesting subject.
Oh, indeed so, and one of the big untold stories about America, Franklin, is that America has a deep, besides the differences among the races, it really is, the major story is a big class divide between the rich, really the super rich, but the rich and the super rich getting richer and more super rich all the time, and the poor getting poorer all the time, and the wealth gap is at least as great and maybe greater than ever in U.S. history. And
yes,
then it's this neoliberal poison that has really corrupted this country, and it's been spread across the world, including in Egypt, including in Lebanon. This is really what the Hariris are, and what the old god in Egypt was, Mubarak, and a man like Mubarak, who made headlines now, that estimates of what he stole, maybe as much as $70 billion. Well, you know, I mean, he got his wealth the old-fashioned way, the same way people in America get their wealth the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
They steal it. They steal it.
Absolutely.
Except
that's
Mubarak is
the best
piker.
Way to get it.
He's a piker. He's a piker, Franklin. You compare him to the Wall Street bankers. Mubarak stole tens of billions. And the Wall Street crooks, they've stolen trillions of dollars. I mean, they not only stole it, but they literally own control of the Federal Reserve. And we know, and it was pulling teeth to find this out, that the Federal Reserve has literally taken at least $12.4 trillion with a T, as in Tom, $12.4 trillion of my money and everybody else's money in the country who is not a member of the super rich, and giving it to these gangsters that already wrecked the economy, and they're stealing more all the time. And this is the way America is run, and America wants the rest of the world run the same way. So the rich get all the benefits, and the poor, I don't think they really care about religion. They care about class.
No.
They care about working people they can exploit.
That's right.
And they don't care whether they go to a church or a synagogue or a mosque.
Right.
As long as they're docile.
Right.
And they accept their exploitation, and they keep their heads down and they shut up and they don't make a commotion like the Egyptians are doing. As long as they do that, they're fine. And we don't care if a government calls itself a democracy or a despotism. We don't care, as long as the people who lead that government obey what we tell them to do. Then they're our friends. Franklin Roosevelt had the great line about the Batista government in Cuba. He's a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch.
And
that's exactly the way things are today. We're getting near the end of the program. I want to give the rest of it to you.
How much time do we have?
Oh, we have about 3-4 minutes.
3 minutes. Well, first, I agree with you. Secondly, Stephen, I think you got to come over to this neighborhood. You've got to come to Lebanon. We'll cooperate with you. I don't know what your situation is with your station. Depending on what goes to Egypt, I think with your knowledge and your background and your instincts, you got to come to Egypt and you got to come to Lebanon and spend a little time. I cannot tell your audience that we've shed any light this evening in our discussion. But I can tell you, Stephen, that I have no light here at all. You used up my last candle, Stephen. I've got complete darkness. This is not an appeal for your audience to send me candles. We'll be all light because, inshallah, the sun will rise tomorrow. But I'm in the pitch black. But it's fascinating, Stephen. We're privileged to live and to observe this amazing, fascinating slice, this period of history. I'm extremely encouraged, as I think you are, by recent events. What happens tomorrow here in Lebanon and in Egypt and the Middle East and America, it's just fully fascinating. I got an email yesterday from Chomsky, and you know, I'm repeating myself, but he says he's never seen something like this, and I respect him because of his background, and I respect you for your depth and your history on the subject of civil rights and human rights. And just to say that it's been a privilege to discuss the things with you, and I hope we cross paths before long, and I hope it's over here. And we'll both witness what happens starting tomorrow.
Oh, I share your hopes and your dreams, Franklin. I absolutely do. And I absolutely want to get you back on this program, whether you have candle power or you don't have candle power. I wanted to say it sounds like you're back in the dark ages.
Yeah, in some ways, it's like that. We spend so much energy worrying about stuff that you don't. I mean, you worry about other stuff. I can walk out here and die in at 2 a.m. Nobody's going to bother me. This is the safest place in Lebanon. And you know, you probably can't go out at 3 a.m. in certain neighborhoods. We can do that here. We have different problems.
Oh,
we don't have
drug dealers,
all that. So, we both have problems, that's sure.
Oh, absolutely. You do not want to go on the wrong streets in Chicago at the wrong time of day.
I believe it. I believe
even
it.
On the main streets, you can get yourself in big trouble. Oh, Frank, we are out of time. My great, great thanks for coming on. I'll send you an email. I hope it reaches you. I thank everybody after the program. I will end the program, send you an email. It's coming. I hope it arrives. And I honestly look forward to doing this again.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you so
All
much.
All the best to you. And keep writing.
I absolutely will. And I'll just tell my listeners, join us again next Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Weekends at 1 p.m. To get programming like this, I guarantee you it's the real McCoy and passion and truth and so on. We're not perfect, but we sure try. We try our damnedest. Make it a regular habit.